Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber Podcast. My name is Tony Groves and today I'm flying solo. Martin is actually helping someone on a mission of mercy. So, you know, he does a lot of work in the background. He's not as bad as I tell people he is. He's actually a nice guy. And don't let that cranky face fool you. We are back to our friend and journalist in Gaza, Hannah Salah. Hannah, first of all, how are you? And thanks for talking to us again.
Thank you. Today I am feeling good. Yesterday was like a little bit calm in my area compared to the previous days. But before I start speaking about more updates from Gaza, I would like to thank all the supporters that they are hearing me. And I really appreciate all the support that and messages that they are sending to me online. This means a lot for me and for all Palestinians here in Gaza. I did not expect that many people will hear me and this will make some change, but that's perfect and that's good for Palestinians.
Yeah, and I think it's really great that you have got so many people engaged and listening, and I'm touched that so many people who've listened to the podcast have heard your voice and been able to shape the narrative of how they feel about the conflict. Hannah, we do want to talk today a bit differently. We want to talk about some of the economic impacts of what is going on, because when we spoke previously, you said that, you know, the demands were, you know, for the people in East Jerusalem to about the repossessions of homes, about the evictions, about the, you know, the ability to go to Al-Aqsa Mosque. All of these things were a list of demands, but the demands have to grow because, and again, I got to say to listeners, Hannah has a brilliant story in the LA Times today. The link will be in the blurb. You go and read it. But some of the streets have been just been reduced to rubble, and the economy, which was already struggling, is destroyed as part of this. Can you just give me a sense of some of the details that you've collected over the last few hours, please?
Yes, actually, Tony, the economic damage increased in Gaza. It was only 8 days of continuous escalation in Gaza, but the damage that this escalation caused was not expected to reach this much of destruction, actually. Yesterday, there was a direct targeting for factories in Gaza and in industrial areas. One of these factories was an ice cream factory. And the GPS for all factories in Gaza are known for the Israeli airplanes and for the military operations rooms for the Israelis. I don't know why they targeted the ice cream factory. And many people in Gaza are asking, what does the factory did for them? I just spoke with Ministry of National Economy and with some economic experts from Gaza. They confirmed that there was direct targeting for the economic components of Gaza. 40 factory that process food and other material for Gaza were destroyed. 10,000 houses were partially or totally destroyed. There is an estimation from Ministry of Agriculture of $20 million losses for farmers in Gaza due to the ongoing escalation that prevent them from going to harvest their production and even go to irrigate their production. And the only commercial crossing is still closed for the 10-day on a row, preventing them from exporting their agricultural crops to the outside world. There are 300 small shop and companies were also damaged by the ongoing escalation. The total destruction caused accumulated losses of $200 million during these 8 days. The reconstruction mechanism could take a lot of time, but people in Gaza expect that they need at least 1 year to just swallow or to understand what has happened in the streets and for the companies and the economy in Gaza. The reconstruction mechanism that was prepared previously in the 2014 war made the reconstruction processes very, very slow. It was called the Gaza Reconstruction Mechanism, monitored by the UN. There was a restriction on the entry of material to Gaza. Before you import this material, you have to coordinate with the Israelis and with the other agencies that decreased the number of allowed material because many items were banned from the entry because it was considered dual-use material. So people were not able to reconstruct their factories and their houses as normal. Many factories need material and machines to process the industrial goods in Gaza, but they could not import this material from the outside. So even fishery, for the fishery sector, the fishermen for 10 days now cannot go to fishing. They depend on fishery for their daily livelihood. In addition to the ban of going to work in the sea, there are some damages in their boats. Generators for these boats or the engines and some material needed to repair these boats are already banned from entering Gaza, even from before this operation against Gaza.
Just going to interrupt the podcast for a few seconds while I basically ask you to, if you're listening, if you're enjoying what you're hearing, if you think it has value or it helps or it changes conversations or it's amplifying voices that you might not hear anywhere else, please help us keep doing that. It's really that simple. It's you are the only thing that keeps the podcast going. Listeners putting their hands in their pocket, going to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. So it's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. You go in there, there's a range of options. Plus, there's a lot of benefits. Make sure if you do come in on at the $6, $5.50 a month, you get a consolidated feed. You get, which means you get all of our podcasts, including the patron only exclusive ones, which there are mountains of, by the way, and access to our Sunday shows and other events. You'll see the benefits in there. It would really help us. It helps us keep going. Things are pretty difficult right now, I have to be honest, but you know, if you think that you enjoy this, or maybe enjoy is the wrong word, but you think it has value, if it has value, show it. That's all. patreon.com/tortoiseshack, and let you get back to listening to the podcast. Thank you.
And some material needed to repair these boats are already banned from entering Gaza, even from before this operation against Gaza. So it was considered dual-use material also. And I wanted to highlight that since 2007, Israel was banning the entry of new boats from Gaza, not only the engine of boats. So if a fisherman needs to repair his boat, he needs to depend on local substitutions that doesn't allow him to go inside the sea for longer distance to catch more fish and increase his daily income. So the daily income is already limited for the fishermen. These are the main items that were provided by ministries in Gaza. They said that even the infrastructure of the streets, the electricity network, the internet network, some companies that provide solar energy systems were also damaged. This will make it hard for civilians to cope after even the truce. The prices of material in Gaza increased. Even if I try to go to the shop to bring some vegetables, it's not, there are no enough fresh vegetables in the shops, and the prices are increased even if you want to buy few materials. To cope with the shortage of electricity, the prices are increasing highly. So there is a shortage in food supplies in Gaza. The only commercial crossing was closed for 8 days, or more than 8 days, actually. Today was open for the first time for a few hours to allow the entry of fodder for poultry farms, for cow breeders, because if it did not enter, this livestock will die from the shortage of fodder. They allowed the entry of some fuel to operate the only electricity plant. And some food items to enter in Gaza. But I think that this caused a few hours of calm because they were allowing the entry of some food items. I don't know if I can mention some feedback that I have received through Twitter yesterday, but one of the followers was asking me about the children and how is their situation in Gaza. Actually, the children cannot cope with what is happening. We are, as older than them, cannot bear the huge strikes and the sounds of bombs that is not only destructing the buildings, but it dig on the ground to destruct even the streets and the infrastructure of Gaza. So earthquakes were happening during these Israeli airstrikes. As I shared some drawings from some children from Gaza, they show that they are terrified from what is happening. Evacuating children from Gaza, I don't think that it will be easy because Israel is not allowing people to travel easily. But if there are organizations from outside Gaza that can allow exchange visits for children from here to, or even visits from people from outside Gaza to come to Gaza to do some refreshment to those children, to do some activities for them, just to release the stress of what has happened is important, actually.
Yeah, the trauma of this is quite severe. I mean, you shared a video yesterday when you could see a child who had survived an airstrike, and that child will need a lot of, you know, look, mental health is an issue anyway, but when you see the trauma of this, and I've read sentences from some of your pieces about how even when this ends, are we ever going to be happy again? You know, that's a terrifying idea. Just if people are in a position to actually try and donate, are there organizations that you could think that maybe that we can maybe let listeners know, because I know other listeners have asked, you know, if they were wanted to. And again, we've seen how difficult it is. Are the best things to go through the ACTED website, or what would you recommend?
ACTED, Oxfam, NRC, Save the Children. Those organizations are doing a great efforts with people. There are local institutions. They can search on the internet. They can ask me about these institutions if they are operating in a good way in Gaza, so I can just refer them. I can connect people with them, with some families here in Gaza if they want to support directly. So I think that a lot of efforts can be done, even if internationals can come to Gaza for visits. I remember when I was a child in the 2000s, I was happy when I was seeing foreigners doing some activities for us when I was a child in the school. It was something that, yes, we cannot go outside the world, but it means a lot when we see support from people, and they are just providing us with some positive energy that we needed, because the escalations and the current situation, even without escalation for the Israeli siege, is putting a pressure on the psychological health and the well-being of children and even old people. So these visits are important, the exchange visits, supporting the organizations, supporting individuals through the names of families which appeared on the media. When we are talking about the children, there are children who were rescued from under the rubble. And today I'm supposed to go to a Shifa hospital to just cover some of the stories of those survivors who spent hours under the rubble, and when they were rescued, they found that their full family, entire family, or part of their family members were killed under the rubble. So I think that there are a lot of types of support that can be done for children, for women, for families, and even for the government in Gaza. I understand that this government is part of under international pressure to receive some fund, and there are a lot of sanctions that prevent the entry of financial sources and even logistical resources to Gaza because of them. But there is a part of the work that ministries is doing, like Ministry of Agriculture, Ministry of National Economy, Ministry of Social Affairs. They are providing services to civilians. I don't care to the military side. I don't care to what they are preparing. But there are civilians who are receiving services. For example, the food voucher that the government is sending for per month for these poor families. The 3 months payment that it provides for the very poor families through the social affairs ministry. The inputs, the agricultural inputs that are provided to by the Ministry of Agriculture to the farmers. I think that there are some services that need to be provided for people through the government or through the international NGOs that are operating in Gaza.
Hannah, we've seen that there are sanctions, heavy sanctions on, but I also think whenever you speak about the aspect of it, like Gaza is a very small, densely populated strip along the Mediterranean with 2 million people packed in the middle of a global pandemic with coronavirus on the rise, and it's and being shelled, I think was 830 airstrikes was what the update was from the Israeli side on Monday alone. The death toll is horrendous. We've seen women and children losing their lives. And the unfortunately, the UN, any attempt to call for a ceasefire was blocked effectively by the US's veto on that. We've seen pressure starting to build in you know, with marches and people showing solidarity. Having said all of that, any talks of truce now? There was a lot of talk of ceasefires and a lot of talk of truce. Has anything materialized now, or is it simply a case that I heard a minister in from the Knesset from Israel using that awful phrase again about mowing the grass, this awful phrase of how they refer to as, which is effectively, you know, a barbaric way of saying how to treat basically collective punishment. Is there any hope of a truce at this stage?
Just before I speak about the truce, it's worth to mention that yesterday there was a strike that hit the main center for COVID-19 testing. Ministry of Health confirmed that the COVID-19 tests in Gaza will not operate as normal. Ministry of Health also warned from a third wave of COVID-19 among this situation. If they did not provide, they are not able to provide, but they are asking international NGOs to provide some support to the displaced people. There are 10,000 Palestinians who are displaced. They are outside their houses. They fled their houses from North Gaza and eastern part of Gaza near the border, preparing for possible incursion. And even if there is no incursion currently, the artillery shelling is continuing on the agricultural land and their houses there. So they are living in the UNRWA shelters without the main hygiene items, and they need support. So there are fears from a third wave of COVID-19. We already cannot deal with the COVID-19 through the very, very weak health system and the very shortage in a number of vaccination that Israel is not allowed to enter in Gaza. So this is a big pressure on the health system. Today, some of the injured cases were transferred through ambulances to Egypt to receive support, medical support there, and to do the needed surgeries, because the Gaza hospitals are under pressure. They could not deal with that. Even the staff, the specialized staff in the hospitals in Gaza is very limited. So the Egyptian government is the only government that is now supporting Gaza with the logistical things, and they provided some items even through the Rafah crossing that entered yesterday to Gaza. The Egyptian president on Monday, he said that we will be ready to receive more injured cases from Gaza to support. Regarding the truce, there is no indications about any progress, about any details. we hear that some U.S. sources said that they are pressuring on Israel to start a ceasefire, and it's good that they started to speak about a ceasefire, but on the ground there is no progress. The shelling is continuing, the strikes are continuing. There is no hope for, at least for today, I don't see any indication that there will be a truce. And today is number 9 in this continuous escalation. And I don't know if there anything that can be mentioned regarding the truce, because media is not mentioning what are the conditions, what are the details, if there is really indirect negotiation or not. Or it is just bilateral talks from each side about truce. It is hard to speak about the truce because the strikes are still ongoing from both sides, and the things on the ground doesn't seem that there is any truce.
And Hamas themselves have continued to, they still have plenty of rockets to fire back. It seems that they're able to they're continuing to fire back. We're continuing to see Israel operating their Iron Dome thing, and we're seeing, and even the internal clashes in Israel, which are happening in the streets of, you know, there are people, Arab citizens, who are expressing displeasure, and we've seen pressures coming on that way. But I read some awful comments from Benjamin Netanyahu about recently about the strong who survive and the weak get slaughtered, and I thought this was it doesn't sound like a man who is ready to make peace. And then when you have a traditional ally like the US just allowing not even allowing a call for a ceasefire to come true, it's very difficult to know how you can move forward. I've only one more kind of thing. Just we started with the economic thing, the impact of this. The last time, and this sounds really, it's funny to say this because it's so, but the last time this happened, you know, any of the materials that were coming in, they were stopped by Israel, they were checked, and it was you know, very much a case of, well, you know, can you, I want to build my house, and they're saying, well, you could use that for other purposes. How the damage from what we've seen looks like it could take years to rebuild, Hannah. And there are businesses obviously that are gone now. They'll never come back. I mean, you wrote about a closed store that a woman had opened, and she doesn't think she'll be able to ever reopen her business. That impact as well is going to be profound for a number of years without something in any negotiated settlement that says we can, you know, import the and have financial support for these things.
Yes, regarding importation of material, I remember that I was working with some dairy factories here in Gaza, and they are just processing cheese, yogurt, and this material for local industry. We have a good dairy value chain that starts from the farm with the dairy, with the cows, and ends with the customers of who consume the dairy products in Gaza. I was working on developing this value chain, and this was my master actually thesis. And most of the value chain components were affected by the Israeli siege. For example, the type of cows that produce a good milk, and they produce more than 17 liters per day, were not allowed to enter Gaza. In Israel, you can find that the cows can produce from 25 to 30 liters per day. They are good quality. They have even the freedom to import any type of cow from any part of the world. But Gaza cannot import from any part of the world. It only can be allowed to import cows from the Israeli side. And when they send you cows, they send the bad types of cows and the old cows that don't produce that much of milk and the good quality of milk. Even if you want, for example, in Gaza, to improve the feeding system, you don't have the materials and items and factories that can produce and support farmers to to improve the type of feeding. When you go to the factories which receive this milk from farmers, it cannot process all types of dairy products because the machine or the machinery equipment that they need cannot enter Gaza. Some of it are considered dual use material. For example, if they want to produce fresh milk and to put it just in cartons, they cannot bring this material for the packaging. So I think that this is just one example of many goods that Gaza cannot develop due to the restrictions on importing the needed inputs from outside, even for exports. For example, Gaza processes this dairy products, ice cream, biscuits, any other material. All of these materials are not allowed to be exported to the West Bank. I mean, not exporting, to be marketed. This is in West Bank is inside Palestine. Mm. It should not be exports, should be marketing. They are not allowed marketing. And for Israel, it is not allowed to be marketed for outside the world. Cannot be marketed. I don't know why they prevent the economy from being expanded and from free trade. They only allow some of fresh crops. I mean that they don't allow all types of crops that are produced in Gaza to be exported in other countries or marketed in the West Bank and Israel. Farmers are under pressure from these restrictions on imports and exports. They cannot develop their economy, their livelihood, and the factories cannot expand their processing. So I think that even if we want to start a reconstruction for Gaza, these restrictions will make things very hard and will make Gazans depend on substitutions that are low-quality substitutions. You will pay more, but you will not get that quality of inputs and materials that will make you build a good quality home or factory.
When you think 10,000 homes destroyed, I mean, like that, everywhere Ireland is suffering from a housing shortage at the moment. We have a housing crisis. We have and we talk about this and having, you know, 8,000 people in emergency accommodation, which is how we classify homeless people. And, you know, we have different classifications. But when you think 10,000 homes destroyed, and I think that's roughly about 50,000 people who've been displaced because, you know, if a family unit is 5.5 or whatever, when we were talking previously, you'd mentioned that we're talking 50,000 people. And many of these people then are moving into already cramped situations in the middle of a global pandemic. I do, if sounds hopeless, it's like the situation, electricity was gone 15 hours yesterday, was it? Yeah. And how is the situation today? And is there any kind of, or are we just waiting on the next series of strikes and counter strikes to begin again?
First of all, the displaced people who left their houses or their houses were destructed, I think that some local institutions will provide them with a part of a fund to rent new houses, because with the high unemployment rate in Gaza reached 49%, according to formal statistics, they cannot find jobs to provide rent for a new house. And this means that you have to rent a house for 1 year at least until you find a new house to buy or to reconstruct by support of other agencies. So those displaced people are in very hard situation. They cannot find new houses to rent, and they don't have the financial ability to rent a new house. I think that the situation will get harder in the coming days. Some local and Turkish agencies here in Gaza were providing food for the displaced families. But I think that they need a lot of support during this time. The reconstruction of their houses will take time. I don't think that the Israeli will allow even the fund to enter Gaza. There are financial sanctions on the government, and they will not allow the fund, even if there was a fixed amount of fund that is allocated for Gaza reconstruction, they will allow it to enter Gaza in a slow process that will not make it easy for families to go to their houses again. I think the shape of Gaza has changed. It is the streets were destructed, the houses destructed, the shops, the market, some even restaurants at the Gaza beach were destructed yesterday. I don't think that it is easy to go back to normality. These 8 days worked like 40, it was 54 war days in summer 2014 war. So these 8 days were more than what we can imagine. They did the work of many days, not only 8 days, and they destructed the infrastructure and everything that is good and beautiful in Gaza. We usually used to hear from our neighboring countries in Jordan, our relatives and friends, that Gaza looks so pretty. We cannot imagine that Gaza is under the Israeli siege. You are looking in a good condition. You have restaurants and you have a beach. You have good buildings, new malls like Carrefour Mall and Capital Mall and De Facto Mall. These are international brands that we cannot imagine that it exists in Gaza. But now I cannot say anything about the shock that I am in, because all of these were vanished and destructed. And now I think that I am in a very undeveloped area in the world compared to the previous years. We were accumulating a capital. This capital is not about money, but about having a good place to live in. And Israel destroyed this good place. So the children and the old people will be in a bad condition, even if they went to the streets after the truce. And I don't know if the truce will be something real, actually. Until now, there are no conditions that are clear for us that they are negotiating about it. We are just talking about ceasefire, because ceasefire means that the strikes will stop. It will be difficult to stop the strikes and to go back and to stay under the Israeli siege and under the restrictions that will prevent the reconstruction. So it is hard to imagine if this will be really a ceasefire, not a truce. And if we are going to a truce, this means long-term conditions that both sides will work on achieving it. We today just witnessed 4 hours or 5 hours of opening the only commercial crossing, and this was like something revealed us and make us feeling more comfortable. But I think that situation will get harder if it continued for more days.
Hanna Salah in Gaza, we will leave it there today. We really appreciate you continuing to cover this so well and giving voice to the issues. Again, there'll be links in the pod, guys. If you do want to try and help, you'll be able to click on the links and maybe just hit that donate button or whatever the situation is. It's a desperate situation. And again, I'm reminded when I read Hannah's piece earlier about the trauma. Doesn't stop when the missiles stop. And I'm going to quote you, Hannah, actually. Being safe is not the same as being okay. And that is very, very true. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you all very soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.